This week on Heart of the Air features our conversation with newly appointed music director for LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, Dr. Carolyn Watson. Next, we welcome back musician Michelle Schaefer, who will share excerpts from her new album coming out this summer. Our spotlight is with Porter County Library Director Jesse Butts about the May 12th opening of the new Rotary Library Garden.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we're very pleased to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight the director of the Porter County Library, Jesse Butts, and he's going to tell us about some exciting things going on this coming month, but one of which is really important. So, Jesse, welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Welcome, Jesse.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Big exciting thing we have coming up is our library grand opening for our Rotary Library Garden on May 12th at 6:30 in the evening. This has been the culmination of a pretty large effort with donors and grant opportunities and the city of Valparaiso, so we're extremely excited about this opening.
And so are we.
Oh, yeah. And where is the garden located at?
It's right across the street from our Valparaiso branch here in town on Jefferson Street, 106 Jefferson. So it's directly across on the south side of the library. It's tough to miss. It's a beautiful setup.
Did the Valpo Creative Council have anything to do with that?
They did not. So this was actually kind of the brainchild of the library board of trustees and staff working together to make it a reality. So our partnerships included OCRA, that's that Office of Rural Community Affairs, with the state of Indiana, the Redevelopment Commission here in Valpo, Valpo City, and a lot of private donors, including Rotary is making it their big centennial project.
So is the sculpture, what are the future plans for the garden? I'm sure there are other future plans. Do you have the sculpture that we talked about before in place?
So we actually have 4 out of 5 of our sculptures in place. So they look just fantastic. There's kind of unique interpretive pieces, and then there's some children's book, Booger Bear and Stinker Fish. They kind of have that children's book feel to it. But we still have one spot available in the garden with a pre-poured pad that we can't wait for a donor to find the right sculpture that they would love to bring into the garden.
So what's the experience walking into the garden? Like what things are there? We know about the sculpture, but what other things are there for someone who, is it an area that you'd want to go and contemplate your book after you check it out of the library?
In seating areas, is there shaded areas?
Yeah. So actually there's all of those things. So you're going to come in through the gates that are actually designed to look like a book, which is just a fantastic opening entry. But you'll come through and we have a nice bridge that kind of takes you through this magical little space where we have a storyboard trail for children's books, where it's a self-guided story tour that'll take place throughout the guided path around the areas. There are 2 large seating areas on either side of the garden so that a family could just sit down and relax. One of them is in a nice shaded area in a corner. As you come through, you'll be able to see a lot of native plants and wild areas with our bioswale sort of features. A lot of different textures. So we tried to represent Porter County throughout the garden with things like sandy areas and grassy areas and wood. And then we have our fantastic fog walk where you'll be able to press a button and a cool mist will come up out of the ground to kind of really have a mystical sort of feel to it as you come through the garden and finish up. And then, of course, we have our main pavilion where we're going to be able to have library programming. We'll be able to have weddings and such in there. And a nice big open pavilion style setup where there's tables where you can sit outside and eat your lunch and relax with a group of folks. And then during the day, there'll even be food trucks that'll be there at our food truck gates to be able to get some lunch, sit and relax in it. So it's a wonderful space to just walk through, experience, settle, read a book, relax, whatever you'd like.
So what is the event capacity? Like the weddings you're talking about, is there a cap on it?
Yeah, I believe it's around 110, 120, somewhere in that range. We're actually going to be working with the Porter County Expo to come out and help us because they're kind of experts in that catering field side of things. So they're going to come out and help us narrow in on that capacity so we're very comfortable with it.
If you want to use it for like a private thing, like a wedding or something, they would book that through your office then?
Yep. You can reach out through my website here at pcpls.org. You can go on there. There's going to be opportunities to do private rentals on there. We really want to make it a nice experience for everybody and have be a great addition to the community.
You know, we have about a minute and a half left. What other things are going on in May if we go in the library system, I should say, because you have six branches?
Yeah, so for the library system, it's all about gearing up for our summer reading celebration. So that's going to be a summer-long program where we're really trying to help kids make sure that they're reading throughout the year and keep that summer slide from happening. So everything we're doing is about getting geared up for that, adding new materials. We're adding things like homeschool kits and teacher toolkits for next year. So it's all about getting those kids ready for learning for the fall.
Great. I saw that you had some great you're still having quite a bit of online programming for the things, because of the pandemic?
Yeah, our virtual programming continues to be very popular. And so we have online story times, and those are actually going to be getting more and more sophisticated as they go on, as we have a brand new green screen and sound editing studio. So we expect some pretty exciting things in that in the coming months.
As a photographer, I love using green screen when I was doing publicity photos. It makes it so much easier. So tell us once again about the grand opening, where it is, when it is, and for the public.
Sure. The Rotary Library Garden grand opening celebration is going to be on May 12th at 6:30 in the evening. It's going to be open for everybody. Hope everybody can come out and enjoy. It's going to be a great time held by all.
And there's no charge for admission, right?
No charge for anything the library does. That's right.
Well, we'd like to thank Jesse Butts from the Porter County Library, director of that, and talking about the Rotary Library Garden. Thanks so much for being on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And we'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air someone who's been with us a lot of times, who has a big announcement about something going on with the Port County Symphony. Our great friend there, the executive director of LaPorte County Symphony, Tim King, and is going to tell us about their long search and the final thing. Tim, welcome back to Art in the Air and your big announcement.
Well, thank you. Hi, Larry.
Aloha.
Thanks so much for having me back. We have had a three-year process here. Wasn't exactly fit to be 3 years, but it is now, for our new music director for LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra. And so we've had six really wonderfully qualified candidates and who came in and conducted the orchestra over the three-year period. And we have chosen someone, and I'm so happy to announce that the orchestra will be having Dr. Carolyn Watson as our next music director. She has accepted the position and we couldn't be more thrilled. Carolyn is a native Australian who came to the United States initially on a grant, but then came back at the invitation of Interlochen. Of course, everybody around here knows Interlochen, of course. And so she was employed by Interlochen for a while. And now she's the director of orchestral studies at the University of Kansas and does a lot of guest conducting around the country as well. So she came to us in November of 2019. We had a wonderful concert. It was actually the opening concert of the season. It ended up being the only subscription concert we had that season because the next one was supposed to be in March and that didn't happen. But we just couldn't be more thrilled with it. we're already starting to look at programming for next year. And of course, in 2 years is our 50th anniversary. So we're really happy to have Carolyn on board for that. So it's great pleasure that we announced to everyone that Dr. Carolyn Watson will be the new music director of the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra.
And welcome to Art in the Air, Carolyn.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, Carolyn, now with the focus is on you, we'd like to just go into your background a little bit. Tell us your life journey, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So please let our audience know a little bit about Dr. Carolyn Watson.
Sure thing. Okay. So, well, I guess I can start at the beginning. So I started playing violin when I was 5 years old. My mother was the inspiration for that. In fact, she always wanted to play a string instrument, but they only had a piano at home. So she harbored a love of the orchestral string sounds. So coincidentally, both myself and my younger brother ended up playing the violin. He now plays with the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra in Manchester. That really led me through my schools. We both played with the Australian Youth Orchestra. We toured internationally and performed with them throughout the US and in Europe, actually. And my first position was I did some subbing and I played professionally in Australia following my undergraduate degree. Then I spent some time in Europe, in Hungary, in Germany, moved back to Australia and really got quite into teaching. And that was actually what led me in the direction of conducting. So I wasn't actually one of those people that was like, since the age of seven, I decided I was going to be a conductor. That was not me. Since the age of seven, I was going to be a violinist. And I think my journey into conducting was arguably a little bit delayed in that it was quite hard for me to break up with violin. You know, it was quite difficult to divorce yourself from something that you've been doing for so many years. So I came to that decision after having kind of found my way to conducting as a result of my work with young musicians. So I had a busy, what I think the technical term these days is, portfolio career in Sydney. I had a teaching position. I was doing quite a bit of playing, performing, concert mastering with orchestras around, playing chamber music recitals, playing some concerti as well. Alongside all of my teaching activities, I was working with the Sydney Youth Orchestra, another youth orchestra in town. And I guess I just found myself more and more in front of large groups of students with instruments who kind of looked at me like they thought I should know what I was doing, which kind of provided the inspiration for me to actually really go and study so I could, in fact, know much more about what I was doing. So that led me to the Conservatorium in Sydney, which is where I did my undergraduate, and I enrolled in a master's degree there. And somehow that morphed into a doctoral degree. And at the end of that master's degree, kind of almost on a whim, I sent my master's recital to a summer festival because I thought, wow, wouldn't it be just great? I was on this really big professional development bent. I was so busy with like violin playing and things were going really great there. And I was all enthusiastic about my conducting studies. And I thought, wow, I could just, you know, do the two together, play in an orchestra all summer and study conducting. And I did that. And that was in fact at the Aspen Music Festival and School, which I think is really kind of how I came to consider the United States as being an option for me to live and work. And it was really that summer there where I studied with David Zinman that was a very formative experience for me as a conductor. So I went back to Australia and realized I had a very big decision to make whether I wanted to keep on going what I was up to violin-wise and or think about conducting. So I went to Vietnam, actually, great place for a holiday. And I just had to get away and was just like, okay, I really, really, this is like just a major, major life decision. And I came to the conclusion very soon into that trip, in fact, that I felt I had done everything I'd wanted to do as a violinist. And I just felt that there was so much information writing on the wall, as it were, with respect to conducting and developments there. And I decided I just didn't want to wake up and kind of think, well, what if, you know, what could have done had had I, you know, been bold enough to make that decision. And of course, it was a very difficult one. As I mentioned, breaking up with violin, the instrument that I had been playing since I was five. And also, I was very fortunate to have a salaried position in a wonderful, wonderful school in Sydney. And so it was, you know, really kind of, gosh, wow, just giving all of this up and taking a giant leap of faith, as it were. So long story short, I did that, and here I am. In between, there are a few more years that involved leaving that job, going to Europe, spending quite a bit of time watching rehearsals, assisting conductors, learning languages, particularly in European opera houses in Germany. Then I was back to Australia and really trying to figure out what next. And then I saw an advertisement for the Interlochen Arts Academy, who was looking for an orchestra director. And I knew what Interlochen was as a result of my time in Aspen, and looked at the position description, and they wanted someone with high school teaching experience, which I certainly had. My undergraduate degree was a double major in performance and music education. So I had that background, and they also wanted someone with professional conducting experience, by which time I'd finished my doctorate. I'd had some experience in Europe, particularly some competition success in the Kalman competition the year before in Hungary. And I thought, well, I don't know, maybe I could apply for this. So I did, and ended up being one of the finalists, and they flew me over. I think 7 weeks later, I was offered the position and moved to the United States.
Wow, that's quite a journey. I had a quick question about your PhD. Gesture is communication. Briefly tell us about that as far as your dissertation for your doctorate.
Yeah, I guess conducting is one of those things that even myself as a conductor, I must confess, I don't fully understand how it works or what it is or why it works. And, you know, the more you try to get into it, I think in many ways, the more vexing it is. And you look at some conductors and it's immediately apparent, wow, you know, they just look really dynamic on the podium. And then you look at other conductors and they don't look that way on the podium. However, the orchestra sounds absolutely phenomenal, which is really what it should be. So I guess just from an analytical point of view, it was interesting for me to look into and try to discern, try to figure out what it was and what it is that we as conductors do and how we communicate, because such a lot of what we do is unspoken. It's obviously all done via non-verbal communication. Certainly during performances, it's eye contact, it's body language, it's all of those things. And those things are very difficult to quantify, to explain, but you're able to recognize them when you experience them, and you're able to see what, you know, when something is effective and when something's not effective. But to try to, you know, pinpoint or put your finger on is actually quite a challenge, as I certainly find in my teaching of conducting now.
I'm sure the brass instruments are always kind of a challenge too, because they don't understand what pianissimo is.
It's too early in my tenure to get into those kinds of jokes, I think. But
Larry's very funny. My personal appreciation of the orchestra is tremendous. Like, the devotion to sound is phenomenal. And I will admit to being the person that has like a hyper focus on the conductor always, because it's like a dance to me. I just get so captivated by the movement and the response. And I'm always looking to see, trying to direct a correlation between the movement of the conductor and the response of the orchestra. It's just like, so who did you initially model your technique after, and what kind of experience is it like developing your own style? Is it a mix of tradition and intuition, maybe? Or
wow, that's an amazing question, actually. Now I really, really have to think of it. I'm not conscious of any direct kind of modeling or styles. That said, I mean, obviously I did, you know, we assimilate everything that we're exposed to consciously and or unconsciously. In many ways, I suspect I've sort of developed things that look not unlike my conducting professor, which is what you would expect, as you would perhaps have noticed from my dissertation. One of my major inspirations, at least when I was first starting out, was Carlos Kleiber, you know, conductor for whom a lot of conductors is like the ultimate conductor, particularly with regard to the level of detail that we observe in his gestural language. In terms of developing your own kind of language or style, I guess it's just one of those things that kind of evolves. You don't necessarily think about it. The way I think about it is maybe like, you know, if you're cooking something, you have a, you know, somebody says, hey, look, here's this really great recipe. The first time you make it, you'll be absolutely dutiful with regard to, you know, half a teaspoon, half a tablespoon, one cup, three quarters of this. And then the next time you'll make it, you know, you'll put out the recipe and you'll check. And after you've made that same dish, I don't know how many times, you kind of know how it goes. You don't have to check the recipe. I mean, you might want to refer to it. And then you might have also decided that actually it tastes much better with a little bit more of this and a little bit less of that. I think with regard to conducting technique, it's a little bit like that. We need the raw ingredients, and we have to have a basic technique in order for things to work. But after that, it's...
Especially being a guest conductor, because the orchestra has to learn your language and you need to be aware of the orchestra. So the process of introducing your style to an orchestra, what is that conversation like when you...
Yeah, that's another really good question. I remember from my time at Aspen, you know, we had a session with Leonard Slatkin, great American conductor. And someone asked him a question, and I can't remember the question, but I distinctly recall his response, which was something along the lines of, you know, I just do what I do, and I go to one orchestra and I'm a rock star. I go to another orchestra and it just doesn't work. And he just said, I just don't go back to the orchestras that don't like me. And I just thought, wow, like, but you're Leonard Slatkin, like, you get to do that. Like, but I guess I recognize now, or I have more of an insight with respect to exactly what he was meaning in that regard. And it's exactly that. You can feel a chemistry, you can feel a connection, and it's often immediate. And it works both ways as well. When it's not there, it's like, oh gosh, okay. This is, you know, what I normally do, and it's just not clicking today, or it's just not gelling, or perhaps musicians are used to somebody working with them in a different manner. So you have to try to, I guess, read the room to gauge, to recalibrate if maybe things are not going the way that ideally they you would like them to go, and try to make it work. But yeah, that's certainly the benefit of getting to know and to work with a group more than once, that there is an increasing degree of familiarity with each visit, the more that they get to know and understand your style and what you want, and what you mean when you show something. Yeah.
Within that style, what kind of flexibility do you have? Is there such a thing as like an experimental orchestra where you get to be the conductor that is like the painter that is a surrealist, or the one who changes the sky to green and the clouds purple? Is there ever like, what kind of, I don't know, that's what kind of twists can you put on things?
Well, I can't give all my trade secrets away. I'm going to keep something there. I mean, I guess I try always to just really do the very best possible job that I can. And depending on the situation, that can be more challenging in certain environments than others. You know, as for painting the sky green or purple, I mean, perhaps depending on the circumstances and if they demand it. But really, at the end of the day, I try to do the very best that I can and work with everybody to put on a really great orchestral performance.
You know, the question I have too is, you have an extensive conducting career in opera. Compare the differences between opera conducting, where you now have performers on stage and you're in the orchestra pit, versus like a instrumental. I come from a musical theater background, so I understand some of that, but I know opera is different from musical theater. But tell what your approach is for that.
Well, you know, every time I conduct an opera, I'm really reminded of something that one of my very first conducting teachers said, which is, with opera, you always know something's going to go wrong. You just never know where. And I think it's very, very apt. I happen to be working on an opera at the moment, and I've got quite a bit of guest conducting coming up at Des Moines Metro Opera and Amarillo Opera. And the major difference is obviously the orchestral musicians have got the music in front of them. However, everybody on stage is doing absolutely everything from memory. And when you consider just what's involved in, you know, a 1, 2, 3, 5 hour opera production, that's a lot of words, that's a lot of notes, that's a lot of action, emotion that they've got to portray along with movement, picking up props, all of those kinds of things. So I think as a result of that, you know, the complexity of the art form, putting the drama together with the music, there just are so many more things that can happen and very often do happen, the vast majority of which are, very, very minor and solved by good communication between the conductor and performers, ideally. And in most cases, the audience is not aware that anything's even a little bit untoward, which is the most wonderful situation. Always that wonderful.
Being a musical theater director, I the old adage is, if it can fail, it will, and it will in front of the audience. But you're right, keeping things what I call audience invisible is very, very important. And so what brought you to LaPorte County Symphony to audition for them as their music director?
So, you know, that's a great question as well. I guess I was sort of evaluating where I was in my career and where I would like to go. And I thought, and I, as much as I do very much enjoy guest conducting and will continue to do that, I very much enjoy being able to build something over the longer term, which is why I think I really, really relish my job as a teacher, you know, because you can see the difference from the beginning of the end of the year when you look back to the beginning of the year, and you can look back on 2 years or 3 years and 4 years and see that logical sequential development. And as a guest conductor, as much as I enjoy that role, you kind of fly in, you conduct, you go home. So it's a little bit like all care but no responsibility. And I think with a music director role, you're really able to potentially grow, create, build something over the longer term. And that very, very much appeals to me.
Yeah, the family aspect is wonderful.
Right. Thanks.
So you said you're going to continue to guest conduct. How many times a year, and how far are you booked out? You didn't know that you were going to get this position, so I don't know how many years you're booked in advance anyway.
You know, generally things tend to be planned quite a bit in advance, or I should say in the past, pre-COVID, tended to be. I think so many orchestras, and not only orchestras, obviously, everybody's plans were kind of thrown out the window by necessity these past 12, 18 months. So I think a lot of people, when they had been in the habit of scheduling, you know, 6, 12, 18, 2 months, large symphony orchestras, conductors, soloists are often booked 3, 4, 5 years in advance. I have some things on the calendar for 2023, but generally I'm not that not booked up 5 or so years in advance, at least not at this stage. We'll kind of wait and see. That said, my 2021-22 season is getting quite busy, actually, so that's a great thing.
The question I have is, what's some of your favorite pieces that you like to conduct, and things that maybe you haven't that you'd like to do so, and what do you see for LaPorte County Symphony, some of the pieces you want to bring to them?
Oh, wow. So many questions all at once. Let me see if I can answer them. So people often ask me what my favorite piece to conduct is, and it's always the same answer. And it's whatever I am actually conducting at the moment, because it needs to be that in order for me and the musicians to really, you know, experience the music
fresh,
the best that we absolutely can. So I'm working on two chamber operas at the University of Kansas that will be performed next week. So that at the moment, those two pieces are my absolute favorite pieces of music to conduct. As for what I will bring to Le Port, I'm working with the symphony orchestra and the planning committee at the moment on some things for next season. So I've sent through my draft ideas. We've got a meeting very soon for me to receive their thoughts, their feedback, their input, and see whether they kind of like what I've got in mind. And obviously they know the orchestra at this stage much better than I do, and they know the local community, and they've got a sense of what's going to resonate. So I will be more than happy to have their input and to be guided by them in that respect.
And so in LaPorte County Symphony, you'll be making your debut when you'll be taking up the baton August 1st, as I understand it?
That's correct. We're still in the process of figuring out the details with respect to next season, working around calendar things. And I think probably the main event, as it were, will be the first subscription concert in November.
Well, we have about a minute left. Tell us about if people want to listen to your music. I know I spent this morning listening to some Stravinsky on your website and Schubert, but tell people about how they can get in touch with you and read your biography and everything like that.
I think I'm fairly easy to find, actually. You can just simply Google me and you'll likely come across my personal website, which is www.carolyn-watson.com. I had to think whether it's hyphen or underscore. And there is a contact form there if people want to get in contact. I'm easy to find on social media. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter as well, although I don't get on there as often as I likely should. I also have a YouTube channel, so you can listen to a little bit more detail there as well. That's pretty much how to find me and where I am.
And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air. Tim King, the executive director for the LaPorte County Symphony, and the new music director who is coming there, Dr. Carolyn Watson. Thank you so much for being on Art on the Air today.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, too. You all were so supportive of us, and we really appreciate everything you do for the orchestra.
Thank you, Tim. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Welcome back to Art in the Air, someone who's been with us before and sharing her wonderful talents. Her musical writing touches on subjects of light, love, spirit, time, and life's purpose. And also her guitar arrangements have been a framework for her voice, informed by a pop, rock, classical, flamenco, and Americana style. She writes using a nylon string, steel string, and electric guitars, as well as piano. I guess our musical style is eclectic and speaks to the heart. We'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air our singer, songwriter, guitarist friend, Michelle Schaefer. Welcome back to Art in the Air.
Aloha.
Oh, aloha. Thank you so much for inviting me. Everybody's doing well. Spring is upon us.
It sure is. Well, our guests, just to remind them, you can listen to Michelle's previous interview on April 26, 2019 on our website. And she was also part of her COVID-19 updates.
What was your life growing up musically? Was there a lot of music in the household? Were there the piano lessons, or
there wasn't any music lessons really. My dad was a fifer. He was in a fife and drum corps. So I did learn to play fife pretty young, but I didn't keep that up. And I had guitar lessons as a teenager, so I didn't get piano lessons, but I did have guitar lessons, and I did study classical guitar. My mother sang to us, played guitar, folk songs. She loved Johnny Cash. We had lots of Peter, Paul, and Mary records, classical records. I personally love the Beatles from the get-go, from very small. Some of my earliest radio memories were hearing Happy Just to Dance with You and Please Please Me. And my dad would pick up the guitar and he would pretend, he would write silly songs on the guitar. He would sing this silly song, Go to C, Go to C, Go to G, and Back to C. Let's see. And I always loved to sing.
What about writing? In like high school, were you writing poetry?
I was writing poetry. I wrote my first song at 17. As a little girl, though, I went into a field. I was around 8 years old. I tried to write a song. I really wanted to write a song. So I guess what I did was I asked. And I think I realized that I had a poetic voice in my teenage years. I would hear things like, yes, I heard this voice. It was saying prose and poetry, and I needed to write it down. And let's see. So my music teacher used to make me sing America the Beautiful in front of everybody all the time. She would always choose me. And recently I had a friend who listened to some recordings online, somebody I knew as a little girl. She mentioned, oh, Michelle, I listened to what you were doing. You always loved your voice when we were growing up. And I was very, very touched by that.
Yeah, it's so sweet.
Laura Richards. Thank you, Laura.
So when did that transition into, I want to do music and I want to create a body of music, like your first CD?
My first CD didn't actually happen until 1999. Mm-hmm. I was writing through those years. I got married in 92, and I had never stopped writing. I just was distracted by creating a business with my husband that we were making money. We have an art business. And so my music kind of got swept to the side. And then I did do this recording, and then I had a child. I had a child.
That's a big project.
It's lovely. It's been a great project. And then in 2013, my neighbor, Kathleen Lombardo, was a dear friend, and I call her my spiritual mother, my creative mother. And she always encouraged my writing. I would take her songs, I would take her poetry, and she would just push to get it better and rewrites and just to continue. The support was incredible from her. And she died in 2013 in August, suddenly, a very quick illness. And after that, it was like a floodgate. I don't know if she became my muse. I was writing. I created this song. That's how Dashboard happened, this album that was to my master, Mayor Baba. So that song was one of the first songs that I wrote after her death. And then it just was an explosion. So I did two records within a year and a half, secular record and which is Gray Area, and a record called Dashboard that has a bunch of spirit songs to the beloved.
Well, you have a new thing you've been working that's inspired, a new album that you've worked on that's been inspired by COVID. And we want to hear a cut from the first one. It's called, I believe, Stranger. So tell us a little bit about that, and we'll take a quick listen to just part of that. We don't want to release the whole songs because they haven't been released yet. So tell us a little about it.
Well, it was just I started it on, you know, songs are happenings. And it kind of has that James Bond kind of riff thing going in it. And, the bridge or the chorus is about where we've been, where are you going? All can change in a flash in time. You've seen beyond. You got a glimmer of knowing how it is we walk this thin line. I mean, everything can change in an instant. So that song kind of happened, and one of the things that the guitars and the vocals I recorded here in this room that I'm sitting in, and then I took it to my guy, Brian Leach, and he did all the mixing and added additional instruments. So all the oohs, I arranged those. It is kind of like a 1930s Esther Williams film, this kind of sound. It was very exciting, very exciting. And so one of the things that happened during COVID, I was turning myself into a choir in my studio. And
the joys of your home studio that your lovely husband built for you.
So I have the opportunity to play around and just do whatever I feel like today when I don't have to work, you know, like, oh, let me try this. Let me try that. So more and more, some of the production or the direction of the music is what I've been doing here in my space rather than going to a studio and Brian, which he's great. I love working with him, being the driving force of what happens on the record, which is kind of what happened on Gray Area, less for Love Forever, but we're ending up producing together more. And this record in particular, or this CD or album, is really driven by a fusion of acoustic elements, orchestral, merged with a classical element that is a little different.
Let's take a quick listen to Stranger off the Scattered Light album coming out this summer in 2021.
When the stranger comes to call, he walks right in, says nothing at all. Of the offering, finest vintage rare and altering. Where you been? Where are you going?
And that was Stranger from the new Scattered Light album from Michelle Schaefer. A beautiful piece there.
So mysterious sounding.
Thank you.
Well, tell us about the title cut from Scattered, called Scattered Light, which, what was the inspiration beyond on that?
Well, Scattered Light, actually, I started writing the song with these harmonics, playing chords with harmonics, just going through a whole, like, four or five chords, all played up above the 12th fret with harmonics. And the lines that came to me, the dark will call you out, but the light will find you. The dark will call you out, but the light will find you. And I had this going, and I had the structure, but I needed something, and I didn't know what it was. And then I was at a Zoom thing, and a friend, my friend Rosalie, read this poem, this very short poem by this woman, Phyllis Frederick, from a book called Light on Running Water. And it was, so part of her poem has been edited into this song. She's no, the woman's no longer living. Phyllis is gone. And that's where the scattered light burns holes in the night came from. And I just thought it was so beautiful. And I thought, this is the name of this project. And that's, and I believe I, oh, I did. And again, the same thing with the vocals. There's very, just some choir, medieval choir vocals in the beginning and throughout the piece.
Well, let's take a quick listen to the title track from Scattered Light, Scattered Light.
The dark will call you out, but the light will find you. The dark will call you out, but the light will find you. In between the haze and the closing of the day, with the setting of the distant sun, you see the scattered light burns holes in the night. The scattered light burns holes in your mind. The scattered light. Now you finally know the stars. Now you finally know.
And that was the title track off of the new album Scattered Light, available this summer with Michelle Schaefer. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Oh, Michelle, I would love to hear the inspiration behind Inscribe These Words. Can you give us some background on that?
Well, I started to just play these chords, and this line came out, and it's a quote. Mare Baba, inscribe these words on your heart. Nothing matters but love. And so I shortened it. Nothing matters but love. And then it goes on to talk about, if all in all were is in everyone and everything, why can't we just love each other? We're all humans. We need to just love each other. And so with all the things that were going on last year between, you know, all the politics and the butting heads and just the intolerance between, it just broke my heart. And so that's where that came from. And the clip that you're going to play starts out with in the middle of the song is full on choir vocals that were really fun to write. I actually had to write them out and then I sang them, and I recorded each of the lines. I recorded four tracks of each one, so there's 16 tracks of Michelle. Actually might be more, because there's woven notes. There is another layer over that, and Brian did mix them, and he did an amazing job and put all these wonderful cello parts, and he has this new plug-in system where he can do orchestral strings that sound fabulous. And
really, well, why don't we go ahead and take a listen song to that on Inscribe These Words from Scattered Light album, ready for summer release. From the Scattered Light album, Michelle Schaefer. Being a recording engineer back in the tape days, I love the layering of the vocals and everything you talked about. Just so complex in that piece. And, of course, that's coming out this summer.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, Brian Leach, he does an amazing job. We've been working together since 2013. And this is our 1, 2, 4th project. And we've done a bunch of other things as well. Burning Away, not Scattered Light. Burning Away was written the day after Halloween 2019. Because, and there's this thing, and there's some lyrics in there, when autumn and winter are mixed up on the ground, because the leaves were green and it snowed. So it was crazy. It snowed on Halloween. So this song was one of the first songs where I started really playing with the chord structure harmonics on the guitar, like playing a good portion of the song just in harmonics. I have a love for harmonics. I love to finish a song with a harmonic. Ding! It's so lovely. It's so fun. And it's kind of, it's orchestrated pretty good. It's pretty big. It's moody. It's kind of a dark, moody song. There's a lot of dark and moody things going on in this record. But a fusion with orchestrated and vocals and choirs, and it's fun. Being such a blast.
Let's take a listen to Burning Away from the Scattered Light album coming out this summer.
Overlapped the fall, the leaves on the trees barely changed color at all. Now autumn and winter are mixed up on the ground. You opened your heart and your feelings escaped.
Scheduled for summer release from Michelle Schaefer. Scattered Light album, that was a selection from Burning Away, and she's going to release those as singles over the period of time, and then, of course, as a whole album later this summer. So another beautiful piece there.
And now this one, Michelle, when you sent me this a few months ago, I believe, your interpretation of Moondance is so magical that I want to live within that interpretation. I just listen to it over and over again. I'm so excited for everybody to hear it. Now, what made you, or what inspired you to this particular interpretation? I don't want to give too much away. I'll let you do that.
Well, there was a brief... Okay, so I'm in this group called Ghostwriters Highway, and it's run by Marco Mazzi, who lives in Brisbane. He's a producer, composer, who has a music library and pitches to film. And he had a call for a dark and moody version of Moondance, and he couldn't believe it could be done, actually. And I did another one. I did a different song, Heaven is a Place on Earth, by Belinda Carlisle, but we're talking about Moondance. And I was like, oh, I could do that. So I took my guitar, and I just did very simple chords. In pop right now, from what I understand, they're doing just the root and the third for chords. And so I simplified it. And all I did was the root and the third. And I took my hollow body and played it really slow and made it really dark.
Oh, so beautiful.
And I sang it. I sang it in here. And then so there's a different version out. You're just going to hear the guitar in my voice that Brian mixed, but we do have another version, and Marco Mazzi took it and he made it really dark, and there's whispers underneath it, and it's really profound. And I'm doing George Harrison, Isn't It a Pity, right now. I've got that in the works. I did a demo of it, and I just need to record it. I just haven't had time. That's another, but it's going to be the same slow down, simplified guitar part. Very atmospheric.
Gorgeous.
Using that dark, whispery voice.
Well, let's take a listen. This is Moondance from the Scattered Light album, summer release, Michelle Schaefer.
And all the night's magic seemed to whisper and hush, and all the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love?
And that was Moondance from the Scattered Light album, going to be released this summer. So that was Michelle Schaefer once again. Michelle, tell us a little bit about how people can find you, your music and everything, if they want to take a listen to you.
They can find me on Facebook, on Instagram, Michelle Schaefer Music, Spotify, iTunes, CD Baby, YouTube. And so it's Michelle Schaefer Music, S-H-A-F-E-R. Don't put a C. It's two L's in Michelle. And I am working on a new website. So that will be MichelleSchaeferMusic.com. I have an old site up. It's not really updated. So
it's there, but you want to update it.
Another thing on my list. So releasing this record and working on some music videos to go along with that. And that's really exciting.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That was Michelle Schaefer. You got some samples of her music from the Scattered Light album. Singer, songwriter, guitarist, and I was
wonderful,
a
great person.
Wonderful person, and we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. So thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breininger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.